Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's WOSU Public Media Match Day. More about that in a moment. Senate leaders have an agreement on the federal budget, a two-year bipartisan deal that includes increases in military and domestic spending programs. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell yesterday said that the deal isn't perfect, but it is bipartisan.
This bill is the product of extensive negotiations among congressional leaders and the White House. No one would suggest it is perfect, but we worked hard to find common ground and stay focused on serving the American people.
The measure still has to clear a more conservative and activist House. It's All Politics this hour with one of the best in the business, veteran political journalist and host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast, Ken Rudin. Welcome back, Ken. Okay, well, we will wait for Ken Rudin to join us. I'm Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported 89.7 NPR News, and today is WOSU Public Media Match Day. And for today only, your dollars will be matched thanks to a group of generous donors. Put their gifts to work. Have your gift matched. Visit WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. WOSU Public Media Match Day is possible thanks to a group of generous donors. We have a match pool of $60,000, but we can't put their gift to use without you. Listeners like you, giving what you can will make Match Day a success. Your gift of $100 or $150 right now will be matched, but only if we hear from you today. Today only. In fact, we only have something like 8 or 10 hours left in this 24-hour giving event. Put this match money to work by making a gift in any amount. Visit WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. Ken Rudin, are you with me?
I've been with you from the beginning, Ann. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Welcome back.
Thank you. I heard you. You didn't hear me, but hopefully this will work.
Okay. Well, you heard then Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell talk about the budget deal they cut yesterday. It still has to get House approval. From every indication, it's going to pass, but not without a fight. How does the deal shake out for both parties?
Well, first of all, it has to pass the Senate as well. Well, the deadline is tonight, of course. God forbid we can have a deal on the budget that doesn't go down to the last wire, the last minute. But that's the work of Washington. That's the way of Washington, and we just have to deal with it. But both sides, not everybody, as Mitch McConnell said, not everybody is happy with it. We'll explain that in a second. But for the most part, the conservatives and Republicans are happy because they get a $165 billion increase in military spending over the next 2 years. And the Democrats are happy too, because there's $131 billion in non-defense spending, and that means opioid abuse spending and hurricane relief and children's and veterans programs, infrastructure, things like that. So in a sense, both sides did come out on top, but as we saw yesterday with Nancy Pelosi's 8-hour marathon in the House, which is the longest speech in House history. You know, we always talk about Senate filibusters.
Right.
They don't have those things in the House, but Nancy Pelosi spoke for 8 hours and 15 minutes. And the reason she's not happy is because there was no inclusion, nothing at all about immigration and the Dreamers, which is one of the reasons the Republicans, the Democrats, shut down the government in January for 3 days, because the lack of any kind of action on Dreamers. There's still no action on Dreamers, and Nancy Pelosi says she's going to vote against it. But so do many conservatives in the House, saying that this increase in spending violates all of our fiscal responsibility pledges we took when we were elected to begin with. So the left is not completely happy. The right is not completely happy. But Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer did work out their deal, and by all indications, the White House is behind it as well, even though Donald Trump said as recently as Tuesday, let's shut the government down because I don't like what they're doing on immigration. As it turns out, they did nothing on immigration, and it doesn't look like there's going to be a shutdown.
He said, I'd love a government shutdown.
Isn't that something? Isn't that something?
Yeah, it is. It includes $20 billion for infrastructure. That falls far short of what the president was talking about in his State of the Union, right?
Oh, there's $20 billion is hardly enough to fix all the rotting bridges and roads in this country. But at the same time, the president was talking about cuts in a lot of these programs that Schumer insisted on and got into this deal. So even Donald Trump didn't get everything he wanted. But by all indications, the president, Speaker Paul Ryan in the House, they are all behind this deal.
How does it work? I mean, just thumbnail real quick. So the Senate has a resolution that they need to vote on yet?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And not only that, with the deadline at midnight tonight, the Senate has to vote on it, then it has to go to the House, and it has to pass that. All has to happen by midnight, otherwise the government runs out of funding. Now, of course, they could theoretically, you know, not pass it tonight and work in the wee hours of the morning and pass it tomorrow, which is possible. I don't think the government is going to shut down over it, although you know, ostensibly the deadline is 12 o'clock tonight, and that's their goal of getting it done by then.
And despite static from the left and the right, Speaker Ryan is willing to go forward with this.
Oh, he's definitely in favor of it, but we have heard from, as I said, some members of the Freedom Caucus who said that this is just, you know, exorbitant spending, and we are fiscal responsible. That's what's so interesting about Republicans in this, because back in 2011, the Republican Congress worked out this deal with President Obama. It was called sequestration, that we wouldn't raise, we had caps on military and non-defense spending, and we would keep the caps. And the purpose of the Republican deal with Obama was to make sure that the big spending Democrats kept to their deal and kept spending down. But now there seems to be no hesitation at all among many conservative Republicans about increasing spending. So much for ideological purity, right?
You are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is political journalist and host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast, Ken Rudin. It is also WOSU Public Media Match Day on 89.7 NPR News. It's one day only, just today. We're ending this giving event tonight at 8. We have a group of donors who have put up some money in advance, and they're asking you to match it. Amplify your gift. Your dollars will go further today during match day. Visit WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. Thanks to Mildred Murphy in Findlay and David Eisenschmidt in Worthington for your pledge of support. We make it really convenient for you to give today. It only takes a couple minutes of your time, and all we need is your name, your contact information, gift amount, and how you want to pay. So make your investment right now, and your dollars will be matched. Today is WOSU Public Media Match Day. Join us. Visit WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Ken Rudin, President Trump has insisted that the GOP-produced memo on FBI bias against him vindicates him in the Mueller investigation. He has yet to clear the release of the Democratic memo rebutting the GOP one that was released earlier this week. What are the implications of this right now? It's complicated.
Well, it is, and it's also a little, I mean, if you can be a little cynical about the whole thing, it's a little amusing as well, because nobody other than President Trump thinks that the so-called Nunes memo, this is a memo written by the staff of Congressman Nunes of California, who's the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. Nobody except for Donald Trump thinks that this clears him in any way at all. As a matter of fact, it basically it puts the blame for all the investigations on what's going on between President Trump and Russia. It puts the blame on a biased FBI and Justice Department investigation, saying that they used faulty information from the so-called Steele dossier, which was paid for by the DNC and the Hillary Clinton campaign. And they said that basically the investigation into Trump was a biased investigation sponsored by this dossier. But as it turns out, that there's much more to the investigation than the so-called the Jonathan Steele dossier, that Carter Page, one of the top Trump foreign policy officials, has been linked to Russians going back to 2013. He was under FBI investigation or suspicion since 2013. And they also found out that George Papadopoulos, one of the one Trump advisor as well, was meeting with Russians, talked about Russia and information that Russia had about Hillary Clinton. So there is definitely, there seems to be clear reason why the FBI and the Justice Department is interested in whatever connections between Donald Trump and Russia, or the Donald Trump campaign and Russia. And it goes far beyond this so-called Steele dossier, which the Devin Nunes and the Republicans have been mocking.
What are you, what is your sense about that Democratic memo and whether it's going to come out or not?
This is so funny. This is what do I love. This is what I love about Washington, and probably what everybody hates about Washington. So basically, when Devin Nunes had this memo, and they were talking about releasing it, the FBI and the Justice Department pleaded with, please do not release this. It would be very reckless. It would endanger national security. Devin Nunes said, no, we want to release this. We sent it to the President of the United States. Donald Trump was in favor of releasing this from the beginning. Now, the Democrats wrote a counter memo for 10 pages or so, and they would like to release it as well. And Donald Trump says, well, I'm going to look at it, but I'm going to also have to rely on the Justice Department, the FBI, whether they say it's okay to release it. Now, he didn't do that for the Republican memo. Let's see what he does about the Democratic memo.
I've read that some analysts say that if this was Watergate, that there would never have been an investigation if this was the same, if this was the Congress that was in place back in the 70s.
Well, that's a good point, because remember, the thing about I'm losing my voice here. The thing about Watergate was that Richard Nixon was the president, and you had Democratic control of the House and Senate. For all the people who say that what Donald Trump is doing now is obstruction of justice, and whether that's true or not, that's one of the allegations out there. There's not going to be any kind of impeachment when you have Republican control of the House and Senate. And that's why so many people are talking about how important the 2018 midterm elections are.
I'm going to give Ken Rudin's important voice a break right now and say thanks to Dana Kletchka in Columbus and Scott Van Hooser in Lewis Center for your pledge of support. I'm Ann Fisher. This is WOSU Public Media Match Day on 89.7 NPR News. This is an exciting one-day giving event that helps support WOSU Public Media. Today only, your investment will be matched by a group of generous donors. This match is in effect for today only until 8 o'clock tonight. Visit WOSU.org right now or call 1-866-897-9678. Each time you tune in to 89.7 NPR News, you know, you get news and information that you can trust. 89.7 NPR News keeps you up to date on what's happening around the globe and locally. That news is only possible thanks to your generous support. Join us by making a donation of $100 or $200 for Match Day and have your dollars matched. Have your gift, your investment in this station amplified. Don't leave this match money on the table. Visit WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. And thanks so much for your support. Ken Rudin, getting back to the investigation into the Trump campaign relation with Russian actors, I guess is what we call them. The obvious Mueller question is, well, whether or not the president will sit down and talk with him. What's your sense about that?
The president's aides have said from the beginning that it makes no sense for the president to sit down with him, because Donald Trump, as is his wont, and we saw that during a Lester Holt interview, that he can blurt out things that probably do not help his case. So a lot of Trump supporters are saying, do not sit down with Robert Mueller, do not talk to him, and that seems to be the indication there. But what's interesting, one more thing about the Nunes memo, basically what the purpose of that is doing is that when you put a doubt on what Robert Mueller and Rod Rosenstein, the Deputy Attorney General, are trying to do with this investigation, if you call the investigation biased, if you call their motivations biased, then basically you're questioning what Robert Mueller is doing regarding his investigation, and you basically have the American people saying, well, maybe there's nothing, there's no there, it's just all about politics. And by doing that, you're protecting the president of the United States. And that's what's driving the Democrats, and notably Adam Schiff, the ranking Democrat on the Intelligence Committee, driving them nuts, because basically they're doing what the Democrats say is by questioning, by doubting the sincerity and the honesty of the FBI, you're putting the credibility of the FBI in question, and by doing so, you're letting the President of the United States off the hook.
So how does this play out in these primaries? They kick off in early March. We won't be talking again until after they've started kicking off. In the House, more Republicans have announced that they're retiring, and a lot of people think that Democratic control is within reach, but they need 24 seats, and that just feels like a lot to me.
Well, it's not if there's a wave, and we've seen wave elections before. Mm-hmm. Remember in 2010, 2 years into President Obama's yeah. First term, the Republicans picked up 63 seats when Bill Clinton, his midterm elections in 1994, the Republicans picked up 53 seats. So you can have wave elections. Now, when you see what happened at the end of 2017, you saw Democrats doing really well in the Virginia elections. Mm-hmm. You saw them pick up a Senate seat in Alabama, which I don't think they've won since 1066. Well, of course, that's not true.
But 1952 or something like that.
No, it's actually 1992 is the last Democrat who won in Alabama, but it's been a long time. And there seemed to be momentum on the Democratic side. Now, Republicans were nervous. A lot of Republicans, as you point out, are quitting the House. Mm-hmm. They've announced their retirement. And there's many more Republicans quitting than Democrats. But, however, recent polls seem to show that public enthusiasm for the tax cut bill, which Democrats had dismissed as insignificant back in December, more people seem to be thinking that it's a good thing and the Americans and the middle class will gain by it. If that's the case, then Republicans seem to say that they have a case to be made for their retention of the House and Senate in November. We'll see what happens.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest right now, Ken Rudin, political journalist and host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. Thanks to Patricia Radloff in Worthington and Sylvia Bauer in Hilliard for your pledge of support. If you are already a sustaining member of 89.7 NPR News, thank you. But for today, WOSU Public Media Match Day, consider making an additional gift. Your additional gift of $100 or $200 today will be matched thanks to a group of generous WOSU donors. Amplify your gift today during Match Day. Remember, this is a one-day-only giving event. It ends tonight at 8. We have local volunteers standing by to take your pledge over the phone. That's one of the ways that they show their support for 89.7 NPR News. We're asking you to show your support, make an additional gift, and your dollars will go further today. Visit WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. Thanks to Susan and Ian Alexander in Delaware for your pledge of support. Remember, you listen to 89.7 NPR News every day. Maybe this is your favorite program on our station, and for that, I thank you. Well, today is the perfect time to give because today is a very special day for 89.7 NPR News. It's WOSU Public Media Match Day. We match a pool of $60,000 for today, but this is only a success when those dollars are matched. Make a gift of $100 or $200 right now, and that gift will be matched. Visit WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678 and have your dollars matched. If you think you don't have enough to give, just think they'll be matched. This is an opportunity to give more than maybe you think you can because whatever you can afford to give will be amplified. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. As far as you wrote for the USA Today in a column that you don't think Mitt Romney is going to lock horns with Trump if indeed he announces his candidacy for the Senate today, or I'm sorry, by the 15th at least. You say he's too smart. What's going on?
Well, before we get into that, I just want to make a point about WOSU Match Day. there's a photograph of me wearing an official WOSU T-shirt, match day T-shirt. So I don't know if that will encourage people to contribute or discourage, but trust me, the thought of Ken Rudin in a T-shirt is enough a reason, I think, to give to WOSU. That's just my personal feeling. Anyway, okay, so back to Mitt Romney. We know that during the 2016, he was very, very critical of Donald Trump. He called him a fraud, a con man. I mean, you know, and everybody says that this guy is really a definitely lifelong never-Trumper, which is, there's a bunch of them in the Republican Party. Of course, when Donald Trump was putting his cabinet together, it almost seemed like Mitt Romney was groveling to become Secretary of State, so so much for his never Trump. But the point is, he has a very interesting and mixed relationship with the president. He has the capability, Mitt Romney has the capability of being an independent voice. And so even though, of course, you know, he grew up in Michigan, he was governor of Massachusetts, it looks like he's going to run for the Senate in Utah, where Orrin Hatch is quitting. And, of course, Mitt Romney is a Mormon, and Utah is a very heavily Mormon state and likely to win. The February 15th is the deadline when he says he's going to announce his decision. I think he runs. I think he wins. And he has the capability, the possibility of being an independent voice, almost like when you think of Jeff Flake of Arizona or Bob Corker of Tennessee, Republicans who could stand out and criticize the president. But Mitt Romney also knows, first of all, his niece is the chair of the Republican National Committee. That's Ronna Romney McDaniel is his niece. He is not the kind of anti-establishment Republican that you might expect from some other people. So I kind of think, I mean, he's almost like a John Kasich in the sense that Kasich, you know, sometimes talks an independent line, but he's clearly a conservative and a Republican. I don't think Romney would be an anti-Trump Republican in the Senate, but he certainly would not be a go-along, almost sycophant in the way that Orrin Hatch has been in recent years. So for those looking at Mitt Romney and saying that he's going to save the Republican Party from Donald Trump, that's an overgeneralization, but I think he has the capability and the potential for being an independent voice.
But he's been very, very critical. I mean, there's so much on the record of him criticizing Trump now.
Oh, brutal.
Exactly. Yeah. But in some states, that hurts someone like Jeff Flake, but not Mitt Romney in Utah?
Well, one of the reasons is, unlike the evangelical community around the country, the Mormon community really despises all the Donald Trump stuff about, you know, the Access Hollywood tape, and I'm sure the Stormy Daniels stuff. I mean, they believe, basically have this revulsion for this kind of behavior that once upon a time the Christian evangelical community had, but no longer does. When Donald Trump won in Utah, you think of Utah as a very conservative state, and it is, but Trump got under 50% of the vote there. An independent by the name of Evan McMullen got a large percentage of it because there are a lot of Republicans. Yes, they're conservative, but they just don't like the personal, you know, conduct of Donald Trump, and they made their expression known at the ballot box in 2016. So actually, Utah is a good place for somebody like Mitt Romney to run because there is a revulsion for the grabbing comments and the Stormy Daniels comments and other comments about women, what people say is open misogyny. And so actually, Utah is almost the perfect locale for a non-Trump Republican to serve. And Mitt Romney looks like he'll be that guy.
You're listening to 89.7 NPR News. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. Be a part of WOSU Public Media Match Day on 89.7 NPR News. It's an exciting one-day giving event, one day only. This is listener-supported public radio, and listeners just like you make up the bulk of our budget. And for today, an investment in 89.7 NPR News matched by a group of generous donors. We have a match pool of $60,000, and you can be a part of that. Visit WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9666. 78. Thanks to Lois Yoakum in Worthington and Gretchen Schwartz in Delaware for your pledge of support. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Today's world is complicated. It's great to have Ken Rudin here to help us untangle some of this stuff out there in politics inside the Beltway of Washington. There are lots of sources for news and information. 89.7 NPR News is different. This station is your source for the news that matters. 89.7 NPR News helps you cut through the clutter, gain valuable insight, and stay informed. Make an investment in 89.7 NPR News and have that investment matched. Visit WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. Thanks to Blake McAdow in Columbus and also Nancy Eaton in Worthington for your pledge of support. Join Blake and Nancy in showing your support for 89.7 NPR News right now. The number is 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. If you need some further inspiration, check out Twitter or Facebook and you can see Ken Rudin wearing a Match Day t-shirt, a Match Day 2018 t-shirt. It's all there in purple and white and Ken. So, Ken, thanks for showing your support, too.
I just want to know that now that people know I'm wearing the WOSU t-shirt, has contributions stopped immediately or they're continuing to?
I doubt that, Vera. I think they're pouring in right now. Right, folks out there? They're pouring in.
As they should.
1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org and show your support right now for programs just like this, for guests just like Ken Rudin. He joins us once a month now. We've made a commitment, joined forces with Ken 1 hour a month. It doesn't feel like a lot, but it's 1 hour more than we were doing before. So I'm very, very grateful to our supporters, to the people out there who listen and show their support because of that, we can bring Ken on the show, and I appreciate that. Ken Rudin, Philadelphia Eagles players have said they won't, not all of them, but some of them have said they won't attend a White House ceremony to celebrate their Super Bowl win. You know, this is a once-in-a-lifetime chance for a lot of these guys. The president, though, appeared willing to take on the Kneelers again in his State of the Union speech. And I was just wondering, what did you make of that? Was he kind of preempting any disdain by players one way or the other?
You know, what's so fascinating to me about the State of the Union, and that was only a week ago. I mean, since then, the president is talking about treasonous Democrats who didn't applaud and things like that. But if you listen to the State of the Union address, there was a lot of talk by President Trump about coming together, putting politics aside, working bipartisanship, working together. And for much of it, it was a very positive speech. But he did throw in a line about the Kneelers, you know, the people the players in the NFL who took a knee during the playing of the national anthem. They were not anti-American. They were not disrespecting our military or our country. As the president said, they were making a statement about how they feel about racial injustice. And whether you support that kind of a tactic before a football game or not, that's not the point. That's what they were doing. They were not anti-American and anti-military and things like that. But having said that, the fact that he would mention that, bring that up in the State of the Union, right after he talks about comity and working together and putting divisiveness behind us, it just seems vintage Donald Trump that he would say something very encouraging and then 20 seconds later, he would just step on his own message. So I don't think it was to preempt the fact that football players were about to boycott the White House ceremony. But obviously, look, who are the people doing the kneeling in the NFL? Many of them were African-American players for the most part, talking about racial injustice in this country. And so when the president attacks them once again, you know, there'll be a response saying, well, I don't want any part of this. I don't want to be any part of this White House. Now, in fairness, it's not only black players who are boycotting this. Chris Long, who is also a white player for the Eagles, said, I want no part of this as well. I hate the intersection, the confluence of sports and politics. That's the two things I'd love to be kept far apart. But when you have a president who attacks players, you know, I suspect players will respond in kind.
Thanks to Malcolm Kennedy and Kimberly Ritchie in Granville for your pledge of support. Also, Yuli Lewis in Delaware and Dean Sheldon in Greenwich for your pledge of support for 89.7 NPR News and WOSU Public Media here on WOSU Public Media Match Day. It's a one-day event. It ends at 8 p.m. today. So make your call right now, 1-866-897-9678. There's a pool of $60,000 made possible by a group of generous donors. They will match your pledge today. Right now, 1-866-897-9678, or go online to WOSU.org. Show your support now. If this is a program that you care about, if you listen to WOSU 89.7 NPR News throughout the week, figure out those hours, count them up, and try to figure out what they're worth to you, and find that whatever they're worth to you, we can match that today, today only, with our pool from the generous donors. 1-866-897-9678. Thanks to Susan and Scott McKinley and Bexley for your pledge of support. Join Susan and Scott and show your support right now during this important hour. We're talking with Ken Rudin, a veteran political journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. It's a special hour today with Ken. He usually joins us later on in the month. We brought him out today because we wanted to show you once again and underscore our commitment to helping you understand what's going on inside the Beltway there in Washington. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. And Bill in Columbus, you're on the air with Ken Rudin. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, hi. I have a question or a problem with the kneeling, with the football players kneeling.
Yeah.
When I propose to my wife, I knelt. When I go to church, when I pray, I kneel. To me, that is the ultimate sign of respect and the most respectful way they could possibly protest. And I don't get it.
You mean you don't get why it's disparaged?
Yes, exactly. Okay. I mean, why they're calling that an insult. It's not an insult. Kneeling is the ultimate sign of respect.
Ken Rudin?
Well, actually, I wasn't sure where Bill was going with it, but now I understand what he's saying. He's saying basically that these players were showing the ultimate respect for their conscience and things like that. So I think of whatever you think of what they did, I think to single them out for disparagement. I mean, the ultimate bad thing I saw was when Vice President Pence was on the West Coast. He flew to Indianapolis to see a game against the San Francisco 49ers for the express purpose of walking out after they started kneeling. I mean, he went to the game and he told the press, "Wait outside. I'm not going to be here long." He went up to his seat. When the 49ers players knelt before the game, he got up and left out of protest. And I thought that was just silly and it just defeated the whole purpose. But look, you can't question the conscience of players. And it's not that they're disrupting the game. I think they have the right to protest. You look, you don't have to pledge allegiance to the flag. You don't have to do anything. I mean, that's what makes this country great. There's nothing. You're not required. You're not forced to do it. And whether you agree with these football players or not, it was a move about conscience. It was a move about a respect for their beliefs. And I think, as Bill said, I mean, they weren't proposing marriage and they weren't in church, but they certainly were expressing their views. And that's what makes this country. This is the United States allows for that kind of protest. We saw it with Rosa Parks. We saw it with Dr. King. We saw it with anybody with any kind of conscience who feels there's an injustice in this country.
Thanks, Bill, for that call. You know, speaking of what the United States allows for, it's kind of tradition these days for the opposing party, the party out of power, to sit on its hands when the president speaks in a State of the Union address. The Republicans did it often for President Obama, and it's not new. There's nothing new about it. Donald Trump, President Trump, didn't seem to understand that that's the way it works at a State of the Union address. I saw him sometimes kind of like raising up his hands to try to either get him to stand up or get him to clap or something. I wasn't sure who he was directing that toward. It was hard to tell from the, the camera shot. But now, then later on in Cincinnati this week, when he was appearing for a completely different issue, he brought that up and suggested treasonous.
It's one thing to, roll your eyes at the fact that the Democrats sat on their hands. And if you saw the camera views, if you looked at Nancy Pelosi and other Democrats, they looked very, very glum and unhappy. And that's fine. But to suggest that those who didn't applaud were un-American, which is what he said, and were treasonous, that smacks of Joe McCarthyism, of course. But if not applauding is treasonous, then what do you make of a congressman from South Carolina who yells out, "You lie," during an address to Congress from President Obama? Mm-hmm. He's calling the President of the United States a liar. To me, that's much different than sitting on your hands. And if the Democrats are committing treason, and believe me, committing treason is not the kind of thing you want to just throw out so lightheartedly. But if that's treason, what do you call somebody who calls somebody a liar? So calls the President of the United States a liar. It's just, there's a big contingent of people in this country who support what the president is doing. If you look at the stock market, you look at the job numbers, you look at his strong views on foreign policy, there is a reason why Donald Trump is popular with many segments of the country. They feel that after 8 years of Barack Obama, that we may have lost something. We may have lost something as far as nationalism, and I respect that. But to criticize the opposition by talking about that the press is the enemy of the American people. That's what exactly we said. The press is the enemy of the American people, which sounds so Soviet Union-ish. And then to talk about treason and things like that, instead of uniting, if you look at Obama's and any other president, actually, any kind of a State of the Union or inaugural address, it's about inclusion. And when you try to just do us against them, it satisfies your base, but I don't know what it does for uniting the country. And that frightens me, especially as we're getting close to a midterm election and a presidential election in 2020.
Thanks to Doug Ballantyne in Columbus and Richard Harper in Worthington for your pledge of support today. Also, Audrey Kramer in Rochester, New York. Thanks for your pledge of support. Whether it's in your kitchen, in your car, or on the run, 89.7 NPR News is always here for you with the news. It's smart, in-depth, and trusted. That's why we ask you to be here for 89.7 NPR News and make your contribution right now during match day. That gift will be matched. Donate now and have that gift matched. Visit WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. We count on you to keep the news and information that we provide on the air. Listener support is the foundation of our budget. This nonprofit public service radio station depends on you. Join us today for WOSU Public Media Match Day and have your investment matched. Make a gift of $5 or $10 a month as a sustainer. Be a part of Match Day. Visit WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. We live in a generous society. We're quick to help a neighbor in need. We chip in for good causes. We certainly spare no expense when we see a Girl Scout approaching with cookies. 89.7 NPR News is a lot like a town square where so many of those worthwhile people, organizations, and activities come together. This station is where local, national, and global events intersect in meaningful ways. Think about how often you learn something new from NPR, the BBC, or our own award-winning 89.7 NPR News team. Have you contributed to 89.7 NPR News yet? We invite you to give a gift and have that gift matched during WOSU Public Media Match Day. Visit WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. 877-897-9678. Thanks to Susan Carter in Columbus and Chuck Vranikovic in Perrysville for your pledge of support. 1-866-897-9678. Join Susan and Chuck. Make that call right now or go online to WOSU.org. And thanks for your support. My guest, Ken Rudin, veteran political journalist and host of the Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. And just as a reminder, if you're a Ken fan, and many of our listeners are, check out the photo on Facebook or I haven't seen it yet, Ken. You keep laughing. And I don't have my phone in with me, so I can't even look it up.
Do you remember the Burt Reynolds when he posed for Playgirl years ago? It's not the same. It's not okay. It's just not the same. But can I just say one thing
about
my relationship with WOSU? And you know, you talk about Ken Rudin and his Political Junkie podcast. For years, when I was at NPR and when I was working with Neil Conan at Talk of the Nation, we would come out to Columbus for events for WOSU, and the turnout was fantastic. The enthusiasm was tremendous. And so I know firsthand the depth of feelings and affection that the Columbus area has for WOSU. I'm thankful for it, and when I hear all these people contributing, it just warms my heart because I know how good WOSU is, and there are so many choices out there for media, but the fact that you have such a loyal bunch of listeners, it just warms my heart because I'm among them. I'm a big fan, always have been, of WOSU.
I remember when I first started in this job, it was 8.5 years ago, and that's about the time you and I met. We met pretty, at least by phone, pretty soon after that. And people would say, oh, but you have to do those pledge drives, or, oh, you have to do the match days or whatever. And I'd say, I'm good with that. I don't mind asking people to show their support.
But I do remember the first conversation we had 8.5 years ago.
Yeah.
The first thing you said to me was, I would love to see a picture of you in a T-shirt. I remember you saying that. And here we go.
You have a razor sharp mind.
It's incredible.
What a memory, Ken. Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. We do still have a few minutes left in the program. If you have a question or comment for Ken, you can give us a call. You can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you want to show that support for the program, though, right now, on a day when we can match whatever you whatever you pledge, give us a call right now at 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. President Trump again was in Cincinnati this week to tout the recent GOP rewrite of the federal tax code. He veered off topic a few times. We've talked a couple of times about that, but here's what he said will change with our taxes.
Workers will not only make more money because of our tax cuts. Starting this month, you will keep that money in your pocket, in your bank, or you may want to buy something, but you're going to keep the money that you earned. You're going to spend it. The government won't be spending it for you. Something really nice about that.
Something really nice about that, he said.
Whatever it is.
I know you mentioned earlier, you referenced this a little bit earlier, briefly going into the midterms with something like this. Is this going to hang on? Is this going to be substantial enough for ordinary Americans to motivate them at the ballot box?
Well, that's a good question. And now, for the early part, after the Republicans passed this tax bill, the Democrats basically rolled their eyes and disparaged it and mocked it because they said that it does help the rich, which it does. It does help the corporations, which it does. But does it really make a difference for the middle class? Now, the Republicans are trying to respond that, yes, it will. Certainly it could hurt people in New York, New Jersey, California, high tax, high property tax states where you can no longer write off the amount of property taxes and state and local taxes as you did before. And I think that could jeopardize Republicans in those states. But for the most part, I do think that, I don't know what it is, how much it is. I do think that middle class will somehow benefit from this, not nearly as much as the wealthy, but they will. And the Republicans are hoping that they could perhaps even hang their hats on the tax bill for the midterm elections, because they don't have much else to show for it. They promised to repeal Obamacare. They didn't do that. There were a lot of other promises they tried to make. They didn't succeed in all of that. They do have the tax bill, and polls are showing that it's more and more popular. Now, Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, tweeted something the other day, something about that, you know, somebody's now getting $1.50 more in her paycheck every week. And she was, that was so ridiculed that he deleted the tweet. But obviously the Republicans are going to try to make the case that the middle class is getting more than $1.50 a week. And if people can feel that their paycheck is increased because of this tax cut, it could certainly help. You know, look, who knows what's going to happen in November? Or, you know, the things change every day. Donald Trump will say something good, something bad, and the polls will go up and down. We'll see. But right now, I think it's the strongest argument the Republicans had. That and the conservative judiciary, those are the two accomplishments I think they've made in their year plus of running the government.
I just wanted to go local real quick with you. A headline in the Columbus Dispatch today, down on the bottom right of the front page, 2018 elections, Ohio ballot stuffed with candidates. The first couple sentences, the writers are Darryl Rowland and Jessica Wehrman and Jim Siegel of the Dispatch. 10 major party candidates for governor, the most since World War II. A half dozen running for U.S. Senate and a glut of 19 seeking Pat Tiberi's former congressional seat. I mean, it's mind-boggling. I need charts made up for me and permanently installed in the studio until after the primaries, because there's so many. It reminds me of, lo and behold, the Republican primary in 2016.
With all the president, you needed two debates because they couldn't fit on the same stage, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know something? There is a tremendous interest. I see it mostly on the nationally. I see it mostly on the Democratic side, especially a record amount of women running for Congress. I mean, we always use that cliche about the year of the woman.
Right.
2018 may very well be that, because there are more women running for office than ever before. But there is tremendous interest on both sides of this election. There's a lot at stake. Obviously, those who did not like Donald Trump are talking about impeachment, and you know that impeachment will never happen unless there's Democratic control of Congress. So that's one of the driving forces. The pro-Trump people are putting out their candidates as well. Ohio, the fact that it went for a Republican after two times of electing Barack Obama has encouraged Republicans to do well. But of course, we know there's a split in the Republican Party in Ohio. The fact that John Kasich still is talking about himself as being perhaps an alternative to Donald Trump in 2020. So I don't know how that will affect the parties in November. But right now, certainly with the May primary in Ohio and other primaries around the country, there is tremendous enthusiasm and a tremendous amount of candidates.
You know, how much do the primaries tell us about what might happen in November? So as those roll out, what are we going to be looking for?
Well, of course, a lot has to do with who wins the primaries. I mean, of course, when you have 10 in a state like Ohio, there is no runoff. So somebody could win with a little plurality of the vote. A lot depends on whether the parties, especially when you have a lot of candidates, whether they can unite behind a candidate. For example, Jim Renacci, the congressman who's running for the Senate, he seems like the Republican Party is united behind him. Richard Cordray, the Democrat who's running for governor of Ohio, the Democrats seem to be uniting behind him. Once upon a time, there were a lot of Democrats running for office there, but a lot of them have withdrawn and are backing Cordray. I mean, there's other opposition as well. So if the parties are united, that's obviously a big plus for November. But if bitter feelings remain, I mean, look, we saw what happened with Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders supporters. Mm-hmm. That chasm has not really completely resolved yet. The question is whether the parties can unite in time. And we'll just have to see what happens and what comes out of the primaries.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Ken Rudin. He is a veteran political journalist, a monthly guest on the show, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. You listen to 89.7 NPR News every day. Maybe this is your favorite program on our station. Well, this is the good time to show that and give right now, because today is a very special day for 89.7 NPR News. It is WOSU Public Media Match Day. We have a match pool of $60,000 for today, but this can only be a success. It only works when those dollars are matched. Make a gift of $100 or $200 right now, and that gift will be matched. Visit WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. Thanks to Jamie Schumacher in Columbus and Jennifer Edwards in Columbus for your pledge of support. Join Jamie and Jennifer and make that pledge of support right now. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Thanks to Mark Linzer in Reynoldsburg for your pledge of support. Be a part of WOSU Public Media Match Day on 89.7 NPR News. It's just a one-day giving event. It ends at 8 p.m. today, one day only. This is listener-supported public radio, and listeners like you make up the bulk of our budget. And for today, your investment in 89.7 NPR News is matched by a group of generous donors. We have a match pool of $60,000. Be a part of that. Visit WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. Thanks to Karen Long in Johnstown and Mary Marie Acosta in Columbus for your pledge of support. Please join them in telling us and showing us how much 89.7 NPR News and WOSU Public Media mean to you. Sometimes the news can be overwhelming. I hear you. That's why 89.7 NPR News also helps you keep in touch with the lighter side of life, keeping it all in perspective, from the latest books to what's new in music, TV, and the arts. All just another reason 89.7 NPR News matters to you. You are the reason it all exists. So please make sure it continues with your contribution right now. And today that gift will be matched. Visit WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. Thanks to Elizabeth and Stanley Bradley in Lithopolis for your pledge of support. 1-866-897-9678. Ken Rudin, I can't let you go before we talk about the stock market. During his trip to Cincinnati this week, the president bragged that companies were returning to the U.S. because of the tax code changes. Let's listen real quick.
When our workers have a level playing field, which they didn't have, they can compete and win against anyone in the world, and that goes for our companies. But we were forcing our companies out. Now we're bringing our companies back in.
Yeah, we're just about out of time, Ken Rudin, but what do you make of that? He likes to brag about the stock market, but it didn't go so well this week.
Well, then it came back the next day. Look, yeah. I think the president, it's risky for any president to take credit for something like that, because, of course, if they take credit for the boom in the stock market, then they should also get the blame for when it declines. Of course, it's not that simple. The president is always not responsible. But look, Donald Trump loves good news, and when he hears good news, he likes to talk about it. But as we see, as we saw, as high as it can go up, it can fall as well. Be careful what you brag about, because it could change on a dime.
Ken Rudin, thanks as always. It's been great having you on today.
I'm so sorry about the T-shirt picture. Thank you, Ann.
Ken Rudin, veteran political journalist and host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. Please check out that photo. I can't wait to see it. Thanks for all of your support. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Your show of support today will be matched by our pool of $60,000. So don't wait. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. All of your time and all of your support is greatly appreciated here at WOSU Public Media. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.